keep it alive. Through these lines I write, I keep it live, cause I thrive. I might just blow your mind tonight. I'm so hyped, but it's no hype. From this height, it's direct hits on sight. I'm your type, lend me your ears to show you that there's something in me. I'm not giving up, I'm standing right here, holding these days hostage, and I'll make this my year. We turning fear into love, and the love's in the air. I love doing this cause nothing compares, nothing can share that same type of feeling. When you feeling them flare, they can't catch it, it's havoc. I rip to a tear, switch a scenario, my stereos, I leave them impaired. Variables start to change, and they're all in my range. I just gotta grab it, it's all mathematics. Every step is drastic, I make it fantastic. I'm trying to take your breath away, asthmatic.
This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo. This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo.
Yeah. Just nod your head with it, so explicit and vivid. Every image is intricate, intimate. I put my all into it, no scrimmage and no rules. I'm a pro tool, hear my heartbeat beating to the vocals. I'm so loco, lost my mind, oh no. It's ponderoso, dope so, no overdose cause it's dope, yo. Man, this is house grown, mixed with some milestones. So I let the style flow, down like the Dow Jones. Bringing it with some foul tones, letting the crowd know we getting loud, so it's eardrum rudiments. Yeah, we bring it rude again. Move, little hooligan. Music for tuning in. Full time to the 10. I'm on my clock, like I told you. I'm doing this for dreams. We pursue.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Anti-Media Radio. Once again, with your host, Nick Burnaby, here on UCY.TV. Thank you all for tuning in, and welcome back to the show. I'm glad to be back with you. Took a nice weekend out in Los Angeles. Went to the Free and Equals United We Stand Fest. And, got a chance to meet some awesome people and do some networking, and had a little too much to drink as well, but you know, we all have those experiences every now and then, but it was all good and fun. Got to hang out with the team here at the Anti-Media. We got a lot of guests from out of state visiting us here in San Diego right now, and first of all, let's introduce everybody that's here in the studio with us. First of all, Claire Bernish, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing good, how are you?
Oh, I'm doing great. We just got done taking you around San Diego, showing you a few of the sights to see, and I think it was a pretty decent time.
I had fun here.
We also have Jim Carey with us from the Pontiac Tribune, one of Claire's co-workers. How are you doing tonight, Jim?
Good.
Awesome, man. Well, we're glad to have you, and I'm glad that you're staying with us here at the Anti-Media headquarters. Also have Jake Anderson in the studio. How are you doing tonight, Jake?
Good, man. Honored to be on this show with some awesome journalists.
Well, we're going to have a pretty awesome show in store for you tonight. We're not going to be taking many callers, but we got plenty to talk about as far as some firsthand stories that we're working on here in the South, Southwest, and some other national and global stories that are going on that we're going to get into. I'm also joined tonight by Manny Aguilar. How you doing, Manny?
Up there, Nick. I'm exhausted, actually, and just like where you were up there, I was down here or down there, you know, and stuff like that.
Misconnection.
Well, good. It was a good world peace event and stuff like that. Very international and stuff like that. They deported veterans and everybody, all these people, a lot of people, thousands of people. It's just like, you know, it just. A lot of radio stations down there. A lot of them actually wanted to connect with you and actually get to meet you in person. That didn't happen. I'm kind of sad about it, you know, but what are we going to do, you know? And it's just an awesome thing, man. It would have been the best event for the Anti-Media of the year, and I kid you not. You know that. I don't exaggerate. I ain't got time for the fucking exaggerations and stuff. It just would have been just explosive, you know, to connect with Mexico City at its best and stuff like that. It just amazing. Basically the chant was peaceful, peace one day, meaning that hopefully there'll be peace around the world for the stuff like that and all that. And just to hear both national anthems right there at the border, you know, stuff like that. And it just, a lot of good looking women too, but that's a different story. And it's just like, oh my God, what a walk. And it was hot and stuff like that. And I actually drove down my car up there, like I told you, man. They gave him a car, so I drove it down there, made it happen for them and stuff like that.
So you met up with those deported veterans, huh?
Yeah, I did and stuff like that. And you've been there personally, you know what I'm talking about and all that. And it's just a beautiful thing. And I just wish you would have been there. Let's put it that way, brother, you know. But we do what we do, you know.
Yeah, exactly, man. Well, you know, we're up in L.A., and Claire and I, as well as Derek from the team, he's here in San Diego as well. He's out right now. He's not in studio. He'll be here Wednesday. we gave a speech about the new media and this movement that's rising. Of course, the anti-media is a big part of it. The Pontiac Tribune, which Claire is the editor-in-chief of, we're all kind of working together to move forward on this adversarial journalism platform and kind of get in the way of the oligarchy as much as we can. I know it's kind of hard when we're just, you know, trying to stand in the way of this huge machine. It's kind of reminiscent of Tiananmen Square, you know, where it's that huge tank rolling through and then one guy goes out and stands in the way, and it can kind of become iconic, and maybe it can be a rallying cry for other people, and we're hoping that we can have that kind of effect on maybe some people that are out there standing on the sidelines, or just people that are just really starting to get their feet wet. There was some people up there in LA that were, you know, young people that were followers of the anti-media, and it was really encouraging to hear from them and to hear that we're influencing some of the younger people out there, and hopefully, you know, sooner or later it'll start making a difference. In fact, I think it already is, especially with some of the coverage that we've been doing on Nestle. And that's what Claire gave a little bit of a speech about when we were up there at the United We Stand Festival, which was down at the Belasco Theater in downtown L.A. And Claire also got the chance to meet up with some of the people that are providing us some inside information about Nestle yesterday, right? And we went up there to where they're bottling the water up in San Bernardino. And keep in mind, the big story, well, the most viral story that we've put out regarding it was how Nestle is pulling 27 million gallons of water out of this one site where they have several springs tapped, and they're only paying the government $524 for 27 million gallons of fresh drinking water, which they bottle it up and sell it back to us. Keep in mind, it's on federal land, so our taxpayer money is going to keep the land up and keep everything, you know, running smoothly in that area, and they're bottling the water and selling it right back to us. So first of all, I wanted to give Claire a chance to maybe talk a little bit about Nestle and what people can expect from us in the near future regarding our coverage of Nestle, because, you know, we're making it a mission to expose these guys for what they're doing, because Nestle, it's not just here in California. They're all over the country. We're getting people reaching out to us from, what, Florida and other places. What can you tell us about what's going on right now?
Well, right now it looks like, as far as Nestle in California goes, in San Bernardino Forest, they're permits is not only expired, but it might not even be valid in the first place. There's not very much of a paper trail, even though there are people working on it and have been trying to work on it for a very long time to try to figure out who actually owns the water rights and what the water rights actually delineate in the permit itself, what they're allowed to draw. And it does not look like everything adds up by far. So there's a long way to go. There's a lot of information to come. It seems like every corner I turn, every time I think I've found like the end craziest thing that Nestle is doing, there's something else that pops up. So actually hearing from some of my contacts and being able to meet with them and have them show me the spring, the actual source of the quote unquote spring that Nestle is drawing its water from, was a really interesting experience.
Yeah, so we got some video, you guys got some interviews and stuff, so look for that in the future. We're going to be exposing Nestle over the next several months in every way possible. I want to welcome our longtime co-host, DB Schwartz, onto the program. How you doing tonight, DB? Oh, DB's out there somewhere. Maybe he can't hear us right now. We're working on the audio. We're having a little problem with the audio right now. I guess there's a little bit of an echo. Anyway, we're working on it. But yeah, there's so much going on with Nestle. It's such a big company. There's so many countries that they have their hands in. Keep in mind, it's like a Swiss-based company or something like that. And there's so many things going on and going wrong with that company. So keep an eye out for that stuff as we continue working on this audio. Next, I want to go to Jake. Jake had a great great story out today on the anti-media. It's probably our biggest story of the day, regarding Oliver North. So, Jake, can you fill us in a little bit? Sorry, not Oliver North, sorry. Oliver Stone.
Who are you thinking of?
Filmmaker extraordinaire, plenty of documentaries that he's put out that really have challenged the establishment in the past. I know he's taken some flack for not being very radical lately, but now he's coming out with some a new series, I think it is, that is really digging into the foreign policy situation and ISIS. And this is something that we talk a lot about on the anti-media, because there's so much, you know, so much going on with ISIS and the troubled history of our meddling over there in Iraq and Syria and the Middle East, many times for oil, other times for geopolitics, other times to contain other countries and that kind of thing. But Jake has a great story out on ISIS, and basically says, Oliver Stone, forget ISIS, America is the real threat to the world. What can you tell us about that, Jake?
Yeah. He's a good man, by the way.
What's that?
He's a good man, Oliver Stone. I enjoy working with the guy. He's very nice to the crew and everything.
You said you work with him?
Yeah, 4th of July.
Huh. Cool. Yeah, I like a lot of his films. In fact, you know, I think JFK is kind of like a, you know, almost like a playbook for how someone, you know, some intrepid young lawyer might try and take on the establishment. And yeah, his early films were very, very activist in nature. Salvador, which is one of his earliest successes, you know, really delved into kind of, you know, how the U.S. government plays this geopolitical game of arming certain rebel groups and whatnot. And then, you know, and then he all of a sudden, during the aughts, he just kind of fell off the map a little bit and decided to reinforce mainstream narratives with films like, you know, W, which gives pretty light treatment to a person who many would consider to be a war criminal, Bush. And then World Trade Center, which is pretty much just a kind of like a telling of the events of 9/11 without any kind of questioning of even, you know, the larger geopolitical motives behind the Saudi family and whatnot. But anyway, the series actually is called The Untold History of the United States, and it's actually not new. It's actually from 2012. But it really kind of hones in on what Oliver Stone calls the nefarious involvement we have in the Middle East. And the final episode, which is kind of what I focus on in this article, is called Bush and Obama, Age of Terror. And I like that he included Obama in that, because indeed Obama has certainly advanced the war on terror, and you know, he's issued drone strikes on Afghanistan, Iraq, Pakistan, Yemen, Libya, and Somalia. And I think, you know, Stone calls says that Obama, you know, lacks the courage of a John F. Kennedy. And there's a, if nothing else, if you want to take a look at the article, and then the clip at the bottom is actually the entirety of the 10th installment. There's, I think, you know, the most salient moment, for me at least, was a clip in which Obama is remarking to the troops, I think at the moment at which we're finally kind of pulling out of Iraq, and he says, unlike the old empires, we don't make these sacrifices for territory or for resources. We do it because it's right. Now, of course, on its face, the I don't even know the word. I don't think you can be too hyperbolic in denouncing the irony of that statement. But you have to watch the actual clip, because there's one of the most surreal moments I can ever imagine is the pause Obama takes between, he says, unlike the old empires, we don't make these sacrifices for territory or for resources. A seemingly endless pause, so long, in fact, that there's no way that there wasn't an intelligent thought process going on in Obama's head. And I think there's a moment there where you can almost see his heart breaking before he says, we do it because it's right. And it's emblematic of how Obama has completely turned himself into the machine. He walked into the police department with his hands out and said, cuff me, to the establishment. And he has been every much as part of the war on terror as the fraudulent aspects of the war on terror as Bush. And I think that was Oliver Stone's point in the series, is showing, countering the mainstream narrative that we associate with our geopolitics and the lie of that we're doing it because it's right, or that we're doing it for national security, when we know to almost a certainty at this point that faulty intelligence was used, and while there was a threat and still is somewhat of a threat of terrorist attacks, it's been largely exploited for wars abroad, economic imperialism. So there we go.
Yeah, and you know, Obama said that it wasn't about territorial gains and stuff, and it really isn't as much about territorial gains anymore as it is just about getting access to resources or refusing access to resources to other parties. And we've gone into depth on that recently. In fact, we posted a story today on the anti-media called America's Role in the Syrian Refugee Crisis and Civil War, an Introduction. In that article, you can go in and read through all the hyperlinked stats and facts behind that, as well as one of our radio shows from a couple weeks ago where we had Manar Milwesh on, and we really dug deep into this geopolitical long game that's been played out over there. And a lot of it has to do with Saudi Arabia, Wahhabism, which is a radical form of Islam that is being kind of funded and spread by our allies in the region, Saudi Arabia, Qatar, you know, the Gulf states. And this is really the ideology that the U.S. latched onto back in the 70s when we were using those kind of people like Osama bin Laden, the Taliban, the Mujahideen to help overthrow or fight off the Soviets in Afghanistan and out in that region. And, you know, that ideology continued to spread, and that's what ISIS is, you know, that's what ISIS has become. And so, you know, dating back to our policies, even before that, but especially in the 70s with Brzezinski and, you know, all this stuff that went on in Afghanistan, Reagan, you know, supported them as well. These are the guys that went on and became the terrorists now that are plaguing the Middle East, you know, in the Syria and Iraq and all that. And then even more recently, we got to look at what went on in Iraq and how we overthrew, we invaded Iraq in the 90s, and then we really went and overthrew the government in 2003. And that kind of opened up a vacuum for ISIS to fill. And so if you look back, dating back over and over again, it's American policies that are really at fault for what's going on in the Middle East, whether we're talking about the destabilization, the Syrian civil war, the growth of ISIS in Iraq. All of this stuff goes back to many of our policies, and of course the Soviets played a role in it back when the Soviets existed. But the Russians are now filling a much smaller role in the world than they were before. This burden really falls back to the U.S., I think. And so it's on us, and as taxpayers, you know, we're funding this stuff, and so we're morally somewhat responsible for all the stuff that's going on, whether it's the little kid that washed up on shore in Turkey that drowned, or all these people trying to fight their way into Europe, and now they're being gassed by the Hungarian cops and not being let out. You know, I didn't see any of these countries that are part of NATO, you know, stopping these foreign policy acts from going on, you know, before the refugee crisis started. But now that all this foreign policy is coming home to roost for a lot of these guys in Europe, now all of a sudden it's like, oh, we got to stop these refugees. Why don't they just stay home where, you know, why don't they just go back to where they came from?
Well, why doesn't NATO force Turkey to take them in, since they're basically the prime actor?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good question. You know, that's a really good question. Now, Turkey has absorbed a lot of the people, but, you know, Turkey is treating the Syrians like shit. And they're putting them into a bunch of camps that are very reminiscent of World War II style labor camps and stuff like that. They're just putting these guys into a huge camp. And keep in mind, Turkey is a major player in what's going on over there. Turkey stands to gain a lot from the overthrow of the Syrian government, because once the Syrian government is gone, then they can build their pipeline that has to go through Turkey. And then Turkey becomes the gatekeeper for oil to Europe. You know what I mean? And so Turkey stands to gain a lot from overthrowing the government of Bashar al-Assad. So they're doing everything they can to destabilize him. And so keeping the migrants there where they're going to be displaced, where they're going to be more unhappy, where they're more likely to pick up arms and fight, that's what Turkey wants, you know. And so they're trying to contain the migrants in within Syrian borders. They've even talked about setting up a no-fly zone on the border right there, which, as far as I know, it's going to materialize relatively soon. And we all know that no-fly zones, if you look at the history of no-fly zones, every single one has been a precursor to an invasion or a regime change. So a no-fly zone, we basically know, you know, it's a really nice way of saying, hey, we're going to overthrow your government in a few months. So, you know, we got to keep an eye on that because that's something that we don't want to support at all.
It's a nice, kind way.
Yeah, it's a really soft way.
We're going to take you over.
Yeah, we'll bring you democracy.
Turkey's also using this to push their own aims as far as all the violence against the Kurds right now. I mean, they've set foot in Iraq in the last 4 days, dude.
Yeah, Turkey's been bombing the Kurds. And we all know the Kurds are one of the few groups in the area that are actually, you know, secular group. It's a secular group that has a relatively decent track record of human rights and stuff like that, unlike most of our other allies, quote-unquote allies in the region, you know. And so Turkey is part of NATO. NATO gets weapon supplies from the United States and Britain for the most part. And so Turkey is bombing the Kurds with most likely American-made weapons. And this is a really sad, really, really sad scenario going on, because Turkey, you know, the announcement was made about a month or a month and a half ago that, oh, Turkey's joining the fight against ISIS. Yay, everybody. Now it's everybody's fighting ISIS. But who are the Turks' first target? They went and started blowing up the Kurds.
They immediately hit the Kurds. And not only that, dude, Erdogan is using this as his position as a Kir, like a one-party Islamic rule under Turkey, which is absolutely contradictory to the founding of Turkey.
Well, I have two quick points on that. Interestingly, I'm working on this article about the, what's called the deep state, and Turkey is actually a comparison point that these different pundits are saying Turkey has a deep state as well. So there's a connection here between a comparison between the way Turkey has a collusion among different, you know, powerful vested interests and America as well. And then interestingly, I just remember during the debate, Rand Paul had said he wanted to arm the Kurds, which I find interesting.
Well, at least he knows who the Kurds are. Trump said he wanted to arm the Kurds, mm-hmm. which is the Iranian Revolutionary Guard. And he didn't even know who they were, you know. And so, you know, Trump's obviously, we talked about this on the last show. Trump is now, his plug is being pulled by the media, as we said, as we've been predicting. Hopefully everyone listening tonight can go back and listen to our other shows, or at least continue listening once you tune in for the first time, because we're calling this election how it is. And we saw the signs laid out last week. They've been laying the groundwork for Free Arena to become the new front runner. And so I just want to make sure everyone sees all this stuff coming, because it's pretty, if you pay close attention to what's really going on, you'll see all the moves that are being made months in advance. And so the if you look back at the first presidential debate, the media really, you know, there was two debates actually in the first. Well, actually, there was two debates in both debates. There's the second tier and the first tier debate. After the second tier debate and the first debate, all the media pundits were like, "Oh, Fiorina, 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 Fiorina!" Right? She makes it into the first tier debate the second time around, and after the debate, it's like the media is like every single media outlet's like Fiorina, 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 Fiorina. And then Trump gets this planted question at this press conference, whatever it was that he was giving, where he goes and he doesn't say anything and he acts like he's saying stuff. He gets a planted question where this guy says that Muslims are the problem and we need to get Muslims out of the country. And, you know, Trump stumbled. We all knew this was coming. As soon as Trump decided to sign that pledge for the Republicans, that's when I knew that the Trump plug was going to get pulled. And sure enough, a week later, boom, they pull his plug. Trump is no longer going to be the top tier candidate as of probably by the end of this week or the following week. You know, it's going to be Fiorina. Fiorina is now the new front runner. And we've seen this before with the last, looking back at the 2012 Republican primary cycle, they went through about 9 different front runners until they finally settled on Romney, which was pretty unpalatable. No one really liked Romney, but he came off as the most, you know, the inevitable guy that was not crazy like, you know, Santorum or
or like Bachman, or wasn't an idiot like what's that guy from Texas? Rick Perry. Yeah, that guy was a total drunk idiot.
I mean, Kane was nuts too, man.
Yeah, all those guys, man.
Well, Nick, there's some good, you know, we were talking about Trump on the other side. The politicians were talking about Trump and stuff like that, you know, and, you know, basically we were talking about it at the premiere, you know, because I had my premiere down here for Our Father's Journey and the movie by director David Fernandez, and it was really good. You know, they fixed up that high school. It's not a dump anymore, man. It looks like a university, Lincoln Heights, you know. It's just really impressive and stuff. And we were talking about that, you know, and people were asking me, what's with the clock, Manny? I took a clock down there because I wanted to let people know that it was not right. And, you know, I wanted to stand with that young man that was arrested because instead of saying, oh, great, he's an inventor, he's a genius, now he's a terrorist because he's a Muslim. So I did that, you know, at the premiere at Lincoln Heights on the red carpet at 7 o'clock and stuff like that. And we were also talking about Trump and stuff like that. And so now, Emilio Estefan is basically, you know, the person that decided to write a song because of what, you know, Trump has done, and it's called "We're All Mexican," you know, just like Ayotzinapa, we're all Ayotzinapa, stuff like that. So I was really moved by that, stuff like that, you know, because that's the way we have to stand by people, you know. So that's what it's all about, stuff like that, you know. And so I was really moved, you know, by all that stuff that was happening, because a lot of good things were happening and stuff like that, you know, and just, and people from the other side want to connect more with San Diego. They told me, tell San Diego we want to connect even more and stuff like that. So I was emotional about it because I want to, you know, bridge the bridge and stuff like that, you know, that, you know, they want me to tell the message, basically tell people down there we're not all bad, you know, because people have this myth about, you know, people from Mexico, you know, it's kind of sad, but some people actually are believing Trump, you know, so.
Yeah, man, and, you know, the people out here on the ground that live in these border cities here in San Diego and here in Chula Vista and all that, and it's all love between cross-border people. And we know what's really, we know the game that's really being played, and unfortunately a lot of these low-information people are being played by these idiots like Trump. Now, with Trump out of the race, not out of the race yet, but, you know, falling from the spotlight, this is what's happening, you know, I give him a couple more weeks before he's in the second tier. His candidacy may be dead in the water, but his rhetoric goes on. And, you know, it as you were mentioning with the kid, Ahmed Mohammed, that built that clock, you know, and all this fear-mongering going on where he takes this brilliant kid, takes this thing to school, and it's like, oh, my God, he's a terrorist. He's brown, and he knows how to make electronics. Get him. You know, and it's a really scary thought. And then you have this this rhetoric permeating with the other, you know, presidential candidates like Ben Carson, who's saying that we can't have a Muslim as a president, but these guys are perfectly okay with having warmongers and war criminals as presidents, but we can't have a Muslim, you know, as if somehow that's, you know, the American way is to exclude a certain religion from public office and things like that. Like, and these guys are like so disconnected from reality and from anything that this country was supposedly built on, you know, religious freedom and all that kind of thing. I mean, these are founding principles, and now these guys want to go out and say, oh, no, we don't want to have anyone outside of mainstream Christianity as a president. This is really scary rhetoric, man, and it's you know, the candidates are going to come and go. Carson's not going to win. Trump's not going to win. Fiorina's not going to win. But the rhetoric and the followers that are following around these horrible thoughts, those kind of things live on, and they're going to be carried on through the next election and the following election. And it's on us to combat these bad ideas, you know. And it's not, exactly. You know, there's nothing inherently wrong with Islam or Christianity or any religion. It's people that use those religions to, you know, adulterize it and turn it into something that it's not. You know, Wahhabism, which is something that, like as I mentioned earlier, is something the U.S. has been helping, you know, push forward. This is what ISIS is. It's Wahhabistic radicalism. The U.S. has been pushing that ideology extremely hard since the 70s. They use it to wedge populations apart in the Middle East, and they use it as a divide-and-conquer tactic. This is our best friend in the Middle East. This is what ISIS is built upon. So we got to keep that in mind, man. This whole battle against – this fight against ISIS, it's not real. They're not actually trying to beat ISIS. They're using – ISIS is just a – it's a opportunistic occurrence in the Middle East that we can use to help overthrow the Syrian government. You know, we got to keep in mind that I think it was only in, 2013 when the U.S. was really trying to overthrow that government directly. Obama was really pushing it. John Kerry, all these guys now that, you know, they're being sold as these anti-war people because of the Iran deal and all that stuff. These are the guys that were trying to overthrow the Syrian government in 2013. And luckily, the people of the United States stood up against it. And they said, you know what? We're not going to fall for this shit this time. But it was only a year and a half later when they created, when ISIS was the new boogeyman. And now we are in Syria. It didn't, the anti-war movement didn't stop, you know. So we got more and more work to continue going.
Nicola mentioned from my friends from Havana, directly from Havana, my friends from Florida, they're also Cuban. They said it was a wonderful, wonderful thing to see the Pope down there and stuff like that. I'm very anti-religion, you know that, but man, the Pope is doing some good stuff, so I don't care what religion you belong to. I mean, the guy's just doing some good stuff out there and stuff like that, so I just wanted to bring it to your attention. And so, and I also want to say hi to Vanilla Brother Jake, and also, I kind of noticed that, I say, wait a minute, Claire's in the studio tonight too, so what's up, Vanilla sister? Just want to send you a shout-out, okay?
Yeah, hey, how are you doing, Manny?
Hey, Nick,
I'm super, super tired, but I'm fired up, you know. I just, like, man, I was just, like, on fire, if you want to, like, that. Even the cops were looking at me and saying, oh, yeah, we know who this guy is. Like, wow, you know. I try to keep a low profile, but it doesn't work. Stuff like that. But good reporting out there, Claire. You know, really doing a good job, so I just want to compliment you on that, too, okay?
Thank you.
Yeah, I second that, and I've been sitting here thinking, actually, Nick, about what you said about that. If you look closely at the GOP race, and it occurred to me that these are movie scripts we're seeing playing out in front of us, and you can almost see Trump as like the prize horse of the GOP. They trotted him out in a way almost to consolidate Islamophobia in a way that would be, let's get this out there into the world. Let's get these thoughts out there in the world, and we'll pull them back, you know? It's a way to bring in the Islamophobes and racists in back into the GOP, get their hatred out there into the world, and now let's pull them back, and now we got our people engaged in this kind of, like, hate, you know.
General xenophobia.
Absolutely. And it's, if you look at it as scripted, I'm just starting to think about this now.
Well, he definitely set the tone for what the GOP can talk about this race. And Fiorina, like, the manipulation by CNN to allow her into the debate shows how clearly, like, it's being played out by the media to manipulate this in the way they want it to.
Yeah, it's being manufactured. And, you know, Fiorina, the only female candidate for the GOP, she's probably the biggest open warmonger out there on the stage. So it's a, you know, it's a very clever ploy to use a woman to sell this warmongering. And she even said that she wouldn't even talk to Vladimir Putin. You know what I mean? I mean, this is World War III talk. This is Cold War talk.
No, she wants to double. She wants to double the military budget and then add new nukes. Like, this is, yeah, no, she's a warmonger, yeah. To the point of, I mean, it's, I mean, we need to be reducing our military.
Yeah, small government, small government Republican. Let's double up that $1 trillion military budget. And how are we going to pay for it? Well, probably through austerity. This is the kind of shit that these guys want to do. They want to decrease the safety nets and increase the huge amount of warfare. They want to stem the flow of immigrants? Okay, let's just drop bombs on more countries. Maybe we'll kill the immigrants before they can get here. You know, is this what they're thinking?
It's not enough for us to have a budget that's like twice the rest of the world. You know, we have to have more of a budget, and we
combined,
have to bomb more,
yeah,
countries, and it's ridiculous. It's amazing it goes this far.
The defense contractors that pad these candidates' campaigns want the contracts for the wars. So we're literally just manufacturing wars to feed the corporatocracy.
Yeah, exactly, man. And I'll tell you what, Fiorina's been on the plate. I mean, they've been pumping her. The media, it's completely manufactured. I don't know a single person anywhere that actually likes Fiorina, but she's being completely manufactured by the media and pumped up. She'll be around for a few months before they plunge her campaign into chaos. And who knows how many front runners are going to go through before they settle on their common sense candidate that's going to, you know, be just as big of a warmonger as the rest and as crazy as the rest of them, but he's going to sell it in a lot nicer way. You know, It's
like a House of Cards episode, except we don't get Kevin Spacey's mellifluous voice guiding us through.
Yeah, exactly. It'd be so much nicer if this was fiction and it weren't, you know, real life and real millions of people dying around the world because of it. But let's shift gears a little bit here, because I get a little depressed talking about this electoral system, man, because it really is so messed up. And it is such a big joke, I think. But I want to go back to Claire, because Claire's working on a really big article that's going to be out tomorrow morning. I'm sure some people got a preview of it today regarding this really crazy scandal that's going on in Afghanistan. As far as I know, it's ongoing. But basically, the U.S., you know, we went over there, we overthrew the Taliban, we installed a puppet government, and now we've got these what they call Afghani security forces out there, which are being trained by U.S. military to kind of supposedly keep that country stable once we pull our military out of that country. Now, of course, that's probably not going to happen. As soon as we pull out, the Taliban's going to take back over, and then we're probably going to go back in just like we went back into Iraq and all that stuff, and, you know, for democracy and freedom. But there's this really horrible story that came out. Really, it went viral today, and we're going to be commenting on it tomorrow on the antimedia.org. But it's about how these security forces, the Afghani security forces, are doing some really, really nasty, horrible things to children in Afghanistan. And but that's not even the worst of it. I mean, this kind of stuff's been going on for a long time over there. But what really horrified me was the role that the U.S. is playing in this entire scandal. And I think Claire can give us a little bit more of a picture of what's going on over there.
Yes, I can. Unfortunately, it looks like basically powerful men in Afghanistan, the commanders and people in charge of the local police force, have this practice called, it looks like Bakabazi, but, you know, I don't know the pronunciation, so forgive me. But basically, they kidnap orphans and pay families of local village children's families off to have these boys come and dress in women's clothes and sing and dance for them, and then they use them as sex slaves. And it's ostensibly an ancient practice that's gone on for years and years and years, and it was kind of suppressed for a while the Taliban was in charge. But now that the Taliban has stepped down from power, the practice has come back again in full force. And now the military, they're saying it's a cultural issue. So the U.S. military is basically silencing all of, you know, Marines and anybody else who comes in contact with this practice and telling them not to say anything because, you know, you don't want to upset the cultural balance. So we're basically giving them kind of a clean slate to do whatever they want.
So, of course, the military guys that, you know, for the most part, they sign up thinking that they're going to go over there and fight for democracy and freedom and stuff. They're over there and, you know, these Marines and stuff, they're like, what in the hell is going on? Like, how is this happening? And some of the guys, they got to the point where they got so fed up. There's one guy in the story that's going out tomorrow on the anti-media that literally beat the shit out of a guy that was doing this stuff, and now he's being forced into retirement because he tried to stop a guy from molesting children.
Exactly.
So can you tell us a little bit more about, like, how is it that they're rationalizing allowing this to go on?
They're calling it a cultural difference. I mean, the U.S. military is saying we need to not interfere in the Afghan cultural affairs, and we need to be sensitive to something that's an accepted practice in their country. We're talking children, mostly boys, as young as 11 years old. There's other cases where, like, a 14-year-old girl was raped, and, I mean, there were kids chained to beds and things, and people tried to speak up from the military, Marines, and now they're being forced into retirement, or they had to step down, or, I mean, this is crazy. I don't understand how any of this is being excused, but it seems to be kind of the ongoing unsaid policy of our military.
Yeah, and, you know, the thing that's really ironic about this is that, you know, when we were being fed the Afghan war, they told us that the Taliban was really mean to kids. They told us the Taliban was really bad to women. And now the government that we've installed there are doing basically even worse things. And according to the article, you know, some of the accounts in there, some of the firsthand accounts, are people are saying, look, it wasn't even this bad under the Taliban. And yeah, we all know the Taliban was shitty too, but Now they're doing this under the U.S. installed government. And to me, I look at this story and I'm like, well, the whole reason why these, you know, and of course it's the infantry level guys that are the ones trying to speak out and try to put a stop to this shit. It's the guys that are up there in the ranks that are being told from the administration or, you know, from the central command, whatever it is, whoever's given the orders, they're being told, look, we don't want any bad PR. We want people thinking that the Afghan security forces are succeeding. We want them thinking they're well organized, that they're effective. And we sure as hell don't want people knowing that they're molesting children.
Right. And we're training these people. We're training them to fight the Taliban and to get the Taliban out and make sure the Taliban's basically exterminated in the area. But we're excusing the practice of pedophilia in the process and just allowing this to continue and making it a de facto policy, which it's insane to me. I don't understand how this has ever been excused, but apparently this has been going on for some time.
Yeah, it's just it's sickening, and this story is going to be out tomorrow. I'm sure it's going to go pretty big, but it's something that people need to know because the war is just not what we're being told, and these grisly details and stuff, they're padded up by the media. They're not talked about. I don't think I've seen any mainstream outlets really talking about it. It broke through the New York Times, but you're not going to see this shit on TV, and they're not going to show you these details about what's really going on because they're so sinister. They don't want anyone questioning foreign policy, and of course the Republican debates reinforcing all that. You know, all they talked about was increasing the amount of wars out there, and I mean, it's really sickening to think about.
We make some really disgusting allies in the process of all the kind of backdoors we have for war and the reasons we continue war. I mean, we make some very unsavory characters our allies, and it's just not. It doesn't sit well. I don't know how anybody can push war at this point with all of this going on.
Yeah, but it's going, you know, and they're really hyping up this war, you know, this war rhetoric. And I think we've been knowing that it was coming for a while. I kind of, you know, we've been talking about it here on the Anti-Media Radio regarding the debates and that it was just going to be just a huge romanticizing of war and foreign policy and getting more and more people involved in it. And, you know, that's really all it is. They're just hyping more people up, demonizing our quote-unquote enemies. And keep in mind now, it's just corporate imperialism. It's nothing more. You know, and I think everyone here on our side of the microphone can kind of agree. I wanted to see if DB had any insight on this, man, because I know you've got some insight into Afghanistan. I mean, the whole thing about Afghanistan, too, is that... that war, you know, of course we were going after bin Laden and stuff. I mean, I don't know why they decided to go overthrow an entire government to find bin Laden. But the thing about Afghanistan is it's rich in resources, you know, and it's got huge opium trade that was almost eradicated by the Taliban. And now that's revived and it's at record producing levels.
Lithium, too.
Yeah.
There's a lot. And I mean, it's not like these have been things that the CIA has been, you know, pretty much confirmed that they've been involved in drug trade before, and it's not like it's obviously that the protection installed in Afghanistan around the opium fields, you know, they backed warlords and everything to protect those assets like their actual natural resource assets, but it is a drug, and now we have a huge influx of heroin over here too, man, and it's not like you can't connect those dots.
Exactly, man, exactly. And you know, the government's had a role in drug trafficking for a long time. In fact, I was doing some research today and I was reading up on Gary Webb, and he's the one that started exposing a lot of that CIA cocaine, crack, you know, Iran-Contra scandal and all that stuff. And he was, according to the research I was looking at today, you know, he was demonized by the New York Times, the LA Times, the Washington Compost, I guess. they all kind of went and attacked this guy instead of looking at his story and saying, oh, this guy broke this huge story about how the CIA is helping funnel crack cocaine into Los Angeles. Instead of covering that story like any reasonable journalistic operation would, instead they started digging into the Gary Webb's record and started digging into his and trying to debunk his story instead of trying to dig deeper into what the government was doing. And this is reminiscent of what's going on right now, man. I mean, these news outlets don't want to cover the foreign policy. They always want to fluff it up. They won't show anything bad. But yet, you know, we look at Saudi Arabia. They're beheading well over 100 people already. It's probably up to 200 by now. They're going to crucify a guy really soon here, and they're lashing journalists. They're about to crucify a guy for protesting, and these are our allies. We don't show any of that stuff on TV, but when ISIS beheads a guy, it's every single news outlet for several weeks is running this video over and over and over again, you know, and we have to start wondering why. I mean, why are they not showing anything that anyone that is within our sphere of influence is doing? Why aren't they showing these guys hanging from bridges in Mexico from being killed by the cartels, having their heads chopped off and boiled in a bath of acid? They're not showing that, but they do show anytime ISIS cuts a guy's head off. You know what I mean?
You have to wonder if our allies are actually worse than our enemies a lot of the time.
I mean, definitely.
Saudi Arabia, I mean, there's not even a Western outlet that'll report a dissenting voice from Saudi Arabia. They act like it doesn't exist, man.
Yeah, and that was, there was a journalist that's, you know, she's still around by the name of Amber Lyon. And she used to work for CNN, and she became somewhat of a whistleblower. And she came out and said, you know what, these dictatorships in the Sunni Gulf states are paying us to write good PR for them. And we won't cover any bad, you know, we won't cover any of the horrible things that they do. Now, keep in mind, you know, this all draws back kind of to the Arab Spring. And we all know that we went overthrew Libya. We went overthrew Gaddafi in Libya because he was being bad to his people, supposedly. We went, and as soon as it started popping off in Syria, we went and radicalized the protesters, armed them, funded them, and funneled weapons from Libya into Syria, what they call a rat line. And that's why this whole thing with Benghazi and the embassy and all that stuff, the whole reason there's a cover-up there, it's not because, oh, it's because Hillary Clinton is responsible and shit. No, I mean, this is what the conservative and Fox News want to tell you, but that just is not even scratching the surface. The real thing that they're not talking about is that there was a CIA operation going on that was running a bunch of weapons from Libya into Syria to try to keep our hands clean so it didn't look like, oh, the U.S. is directly operating in Syria. No, we're just sending all the weapons from Libya that were captured and sending them up into Syria through this thing they call a rat line. And that's why there's all this huge cover up in Benghazi and all that stuff. So you know, as soon as the civil war started, you know, the protesters started popping off in Syria, they went and they tried to hijack it and turn it into a regime change.
Fairness Naggers here in reporting just released a piece today that it was about how the New York Times coverage has shifted over the last couple of years to basically write out the whole narrative of the CIA's intervention in the uprising in Syria. You know, you guys posted that piece about how there's only four or five rebels left fighting, and now the complete mainstream narrative has dropped off the whole history of that civil war, pretty much. And, you know, it's not even that long of a period to write out, but they've already managed to blank half of, like, the CIA's involvement out of everything.
Yeah, there was a piece that we covered late last week on the anti-media, how Obama had allocated $500 million to go train these moderate Syrian rebels to fight against ISIS, supposedly. The truth of the matter was that they're trying to arm people up to fight against Assad. But besides that fact, there's only about, quote-unquote, four or five fighters left that are still operating in Syria. They spent $500 million, and there's only five guys remaining that they've trained and that are actually right now operating. Now, they say they got a couple hundred other guys in the pipeline that they're training. Keep in mind, we covered last month about the first wave of these U.S.-trained rebels went into Syria. In their first battle, they got their asses kicked. Almost all of them got captured. Their commander got captured.
They were shot down.
I mean, they were completely, like, set up, basically. They somehow they thought that they were going to roll into Syria and al-Nusra Front was going to be their ally. Al-Nusra Front is an offshoot of al-Qaeda. So, I mean, these guys are literally training these rebels, hoping that they're going to be able to ally with al-Qaeda to fight against ISIS. I mean, it just doesn't make any sense. The truth of the matter is that they've been trying to overthrow the Assad government for a long time. We've covered it a lot. It's most of it's about pipelines. A lot of it's about containing Russia. like I said, go back and check out the article today, the introduction to the Syrian civil war. It's on the anti-media. Listen to the radio show that's embedded in that article, and you get everything you need to know about what's really going on in Syria by somebody that's not, it wasn't even us, someone with firsthand experience that really knows what's going on over there. I mean, we talk about it all the time, but if you want to hear some really experienced reporting, go check out that show. And I mean, it's just really, really in depth. But, you know, this kind of goes to show the waste. I mean, $500 million, they got five guys out of it. It's crazy. And now Fiorina wants to stack more and more people, you know, more and more money on that budget. The Pentagon, I mean, Claire, you wrote an article, I think it was a month and a half, 2 months ago. That was a really, really in-depth article about how the Pentagon is not even really auditable. I mean, they've lost track of how many trillions of dollars? I mean,
over $8.5 trillion.
The last time an audit was tried, part of the building exploded, right?
last time they admitted that there was money missing and they couldn't account for the money. I mean, the building blew up.
Most of our defense budget is unauditable as well because it's tied up in all these black ops.
Yeah, and so these candidates want to go dump more money in that. We don't even know where the money is going to begin with. You know, this $500 million, I mean, Dan Sanchez made a great point about the $500 million too. And you know, they say that, okay, yeah, we got five fighters out of it. But the truth of the matter is, well, that money probably went somewhere else. You know, and it went into some really into black ops, and it went into some destabilization stuff to try to overthrow the government.
It's never a black hole. Whenever it looks like there's money missing or money misallocated, it always is going somewhere else.
Yeah, it's kind of like that. Those billions of dollars that were flown into Afghanistan, shrink wrapped on pallets, and you know, everyone, oh, where'd the money go? Yeah, well, we don't know. It went somewhere.
That Syrian rebel price tag even looks small once you take into like the Iraqi Defense Force budget that was wasted. You know, how much was blown on that to see them rolled over in like a day in each engagement they've been involved in?
Yeah, and then all their weapons fell to ISIS and all that. You know, just really coincidental stuff going on over there.
I almost feel like we need a new vocabulary to talk about this because I feel like it's people are numb to it now. Like, oh, they've managed to mince the narrative so much that it almost doesn't even have any meaning anymore. It's like so Orwellian now.
Yeah, man. I mean, it's really sad. Hopefully everyone listening tonight, if you guys want to go and dig deeper into the ISIS stuff, just go on the anti-media and search ISIS on the site. We've been covering it really extensively lately. Hopefully everyone's enjoying it because it needs to get out there. Our money is being taken. It's being used to blow kids up and destabilize countries to get oil and to play geopolitics with, you know, countries that we've never been to and we've never seen. And I can't even pronounce them. People don't even know where they're at. I mean, shit, Trump didn't even know who the Quds forces were. Even I know that. It's a huge topic. You can go take your time and dig through it over on the site because there's so much to take in. We can only get through so much of it here on the site, here on the radio show at once. But I want to shift into some other stuff here because there's some other crazy news. First of all, David Cameron stuck his dick into a pig's mouth. That is just crazy, man. I mean, I don't know what to say about that.
Pig. How dare you say that about Margaret Thatcher?
Yeah, hey, you know what? Bush wanted to put Margaret Thatcher on the $10 bill, man. I want to hit that guy in the back of the head. I mean, that's just crazy. You want to put a British woman on our currency? I mean, yeah, it's our financial system is run by the Brits, but still, I mean, at least we got to keep the facade up. We can't just blatantly go put the British faces on our currencies.
That British woman too.
Yeah, and Thatcher, man, Thatcher was horrible.
I love that artwork that our corrupted government in Mexico did. They put Frida Kahlo on one side and Diego de Rivera on the other side of that new 500 peso bill. Have you seen it, right, Nick?
I'm not sure if I've seen it yet.
Okay, yeah. I posted it because Lily actually saw one and she posted it because I hadn't seen one in person and yet because I haven't been on there. Like, she posted it and, man, it looks nice, really nice and stuff like that, you know, so just one of those things, you know, and just, oh my God, those churros yesterday and all that stuff. I was watching somebody eat that thing you bought that day, remember, with all the fixings. I said, oh, I remember Nick eating this stuff, yeah.
Yeah, man, the Toasty Locos, that's my shit, man.
There you go. Hey, thank you.
Hey, Nick, did you take the guests to Tacos Al Gordo?
No, not yet. We're going to take them there before the end of the trip. They're leaving on Wednesday, so still got tomorrow to take him down there. We're going to go down there. Hopefully the pork that we eat isn't the one that Cameron stuck his junk into. You know, and I kind of wanted to just touch on this Cameron stuff because now it's become a media frenzy. Keep in mind, he's on his way out of office anyway. He's not going to run anymore. His political career is over. He's probably going to go work for some big corporation when he's done. Yeah, he may get on the board of Nestle or, you know.
I heard he's the new CEO of Smithfield.
Maybe he'll get on one of these oil company, you know, things that are drilling off the coast of Syria. I don't know. You know, we'll see. But, you know, here's the thing about Cameron, man, and we've been covering him pretty extensively on the anti-media as well. I mean, this whole thing with the pig, I mean, yeah, it's funny and, you know, it's gross and it's you know.
No, it's beautiful. It's a beautiful expression of love.
Yeah, I mean, I guess.
it's the ham and bones club over there, Nick.
Yeah, they don't have the skull and bones. They have the ham and bone. You know, but it kind of, first of all, it goes into this weird, like, elitist frat boy mentality where they do these messed up things. And I think a lot of it is just blackmail fodder for later on. They can blackmail anyone they want by getting to do these weird things.
Yeah.
We all know about the Bush, you know, the crazy theories about Bush and the
skull and
bones. Yeah, the skull and bones thing. And there's so many different rumors that go around about that, and who knows what's really true or not. But the fact of the matter is they got these weird elitist occult type of initiation things that go on all around the world, especially in the West. And man, these guys are really sick in the head that do this kind of stuff. But the thing about Cameron, man, is that this pig thing is really minor compared to the horrible shit that he does. I mean, he's pretty much blatantly Orwellian. He's basically said that England needs to ban encryption altogether because no one should be able to communicate without the government being able to read it. I mean, he's able to come out and say this shit like right out in the open. He also tried to capitalize on the refugee boy that died on the shores of Turkey and tried to advocate for greater role from the English military in Syria and Iraq. He also admitted recently to using drone strikes to kill British citizens in Syria as well. So this guy is on par with Obama. He's a neocon, you know, very, very war hawkish. So this whole pig thing.
He's a giant, polite douche.
Yeah, exactly. This whole pig thing has become somewhat of a media frenzy. But the truth of the matter is, man, this is not the worst that he's done. He's done a lot more than doing bad things to a pig. He is a pig himself. And he's a pig on foreign policy. He doesn't give a shit about anybody except for his corporate handlers and that kind of thing. I mean, the British government is on par with the U.S. government when it comes to oligarchy and when it comes to you know, doing horrible, horrible human rights abuses, propping up dictatorships, overthrowing governments. I mean, you name it. They've done it all. They continue to do it all.
There's surveillance.
Hey, Nick, can we say that he's a lowlife? Let's not offend my pig friends, okay?
Yeah, man. I mean, the pig makes him look good, I guess. You know, it kind of brings him up a notch, you know. But yeah, as Jim was saying, man, the Brits really have the surveillance state down. They make us look kind of amateurish with our NSA and all that stuff. They really got it going over there, don't they?
When they won the Olympic bid, they stepped up their surveillance so hard in London that almost every square inch is covered by CCTV cameras at this point.
Mm-hmm.
There's not anywhere in London you can't go that you're not under surveillance.
Yeah, and their press is a lot more controlled than ours is. It's even worse than the U.S. media. As far-fetched as that sounds, Murdoch basically controls half the market share in Britain. In the U.S., he's only got like a quarter or a third of it. In Britain, he's got about half of it. So, you know, you got half of it is brainwashed Fox News type of people. The other half, you know, you got these pseudo left, you know, media outlets. But now, thankfully, we got the anti-media UK springing up, man, and it's resonating big time out there in the UK. We got almost 10,000 followers on the page now. We've only been up there for 2 weeks, 3 weeks at the most. We've already almost got 10,000 followers on the Facebook page. That's really awesome. So glad to see that it's resonating out there because there's a huge demand. Like I said, their media out there is shit. So, I mean, that's one of the other things going on. We're going to try to cover something about Cameron, about the other things that are a lot worse than sticking your junk into a pig's mouth, because that's pretty bad. But, you know, there's a lot worse things that go on. I guess we're coming to the end of the show tonight. Keep an eye out for Wednesday. We're going to have some other guests here from the anti-media on Wednesday night. And who knows what we're going to be talking about. Hopefully not pig.
Good night, Jake. Good night, TV. Good night, Nick. Good night, Claire. Hasta la vista.
Good night, man. Thank you all for tuning in. Catch us 5 days a week on the Anti-Media. Peace out.
I'ma let them know, no, through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo.